You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
Do you know what white folks call people like you and me in private? Niggers, dogs. Niggers.
Angry Indian Radio.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Stand up and fight for Indigenous rights.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Indian land!
Indian land!
Indian land!
Indian land! Indian land!
You guys have no jurisdiction here.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. The white man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet radio for smart Aboriginal.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
Internet radio for smart Aboriginals.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the Fourth World from within occupied North America, this is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Salutan and peace to all original human beings resident on the physical plane. I'm your host, the Angry Indian, editor-in-chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, blogging to the Fourth World from aboriginalpress.tumblr.com and aboriginalpress.wordpress.com and ang-newswire.blogspot.com. And you have tuned in to Indigenous news, thought, and analyses concerning the issues that matter to original peoples and other communities across the world living under imperial, theological, racist, neoclassist, neocolonialist, neoliberal, neo-fascist, and neo-misogynist control. I wish to welcome you all to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome along, welcome along. Shout out to the gods and earth. Send peace to the original family at this time in strife and struggle. This is the Angry Indian. And we have Sashnan Sanal back again from Sashnan.com from Malaysia. And right now he is in Bangkok, Thailand. dealing with our indigenous people and other Bangkok citizens that are, and I hate to use this term, homeless, indigent, are people who don't have, are people who are living and eking in existence on the streets. We tend to forget about them. When many of us think in the west of Thailand, especially of the city Bangkok, we tend to think of excitement, we tend to think of girl bars, we tend to think of a good time, and we tend to think of Buddhism, and we don't talk about the contradictions, but we really don't discuss the underclass in that country, which is massive. We have many, many people who are living in dire circumstances. We have many people who are not guaranteed one meal a day. We have many people who are just existing from one day into another, and we tend to not think of them. Even when we had the red shirt uprising, we did not really talk about them to any serious degree in the West. And we're going to go to Shasnan right now because he's in the middle of this. This is what he does. Shasnan, welcome back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. And I also want to remind our listeners that he is a member of the Aboriginal News Group. And he's on the ground right now in Bangkok. So welcome, Shasnan.
Thank you, brother. It's good to be back.
You know, I know he's dealing with a flu right now and he's not doing too well, but his spirits are up and he's dealing with our people. So, you know, what's going on in Bangkok right now, Cessna?
A few things. I'm actually working on a project, a community-based project for the not only homeless, but also for urban poor living in the slums. Primarily in the slums connecting to the canals. Some of you may know that Bangkok is known as the Venice of the East. It's also because every year there's this mega flood that comes in and floods almost every single part of Thailand, and Bangkok is severely affected. I was here last year in November for a month doing relief work in relation to the great flood of 2011, and of course anticipating another flood, although I don't think the magnitude will be as bad as last year. But in terms of preparation, helping young people with basic life skills and also first aid, transferring of skills related to first aid and public health. And then, of course, we have this hands, foot, mouth disease, HFMD, that's happening. And we're seeing many schools in Bangkok closing due to public health warnings from the government. Which they are taking it very seriously, and I believe that Cambodia and some other parts of Southeast Asia is already severely affected, with scores of children dying from the disease. So, and also helping issues around harm reduction in relation to needle exchange program in terms of healthy lifestyles, or what I would like to see that young people are determining for themselves what they perceive as healthy lifestyles, and equipping them with critical thinking, problem solving, in relation to not only public health, but also, most importantly, towards their lives. I'm not giving them the tools to escape urban poverty, but I'm giving them the tools and the means for them to be able to understand their own limitations, and most importantly, equip themselves with the skills that they need: critical thinking, problem solving, decision making, conflict resolution, basic communication skills, that sort of thing.
Well, you know, in terms of funding, we hear about a lot of money that is being funneled through non-governmental organizations. We hear about a lot of funding through United States, quote-unquote, charity, UK charity, French charity, United Nations, what have you, World Health Organization. Where exactly does the money go once it reaches the responsible parties in Thailand, how is that money actually allocated, distributed in some cases perhaps? But, you know, what is the end result for the actual person who needs relief in real politics?
I know many funding agencies, international funding agencies, are based in Bangkok. United Nations based NGOs or agencies, or even UNICEF, for example, has a regional office in Bangkok. This is the melting pot of the funding body. However, I don't see any progress. Why? Because poverty, young people, homelessness, statelessness, migrant workers, refugees, whatever not. All the problems are still here in this city of 12 million people, you know, and I don't see active collaboration among regional or local, most importantly, local stakeholders, civil society. Everyone's doing their own rhythm, you know. There's no sense of solidarity. I see Prime Minister Yin Luck's government taking a lead role pertaining to women's issues and, of course, health-based issues and community building issues. I don't see the role of NGOs in the slums, despite what their press say. I'm working on a private capacity. And of course, I do my best to open the channels for collaboration. Funding agencies are not concerned of individuals who want to do something for the community. They prefer a nice package that is laced with nice words and the right corporate image or the right public relation image attached to it. And maybe they are very active out of Bangkok. But Bangkok, the Thais have a saying about Bangkok. Bangkok is Thailand and Thailand is the world. They don't see beyond Thailand. And I can't blame them because this is a population of 70 million people with over 70 plus provinces in Thailand itself. And Bangkok is considered as a province on its own. It's a mega city. So it's very difficult to pinpoint on effectiveness of civil society's engagement with marginalized communities, number one. Number two, it's very difficult to measure success or identify KPIs pertaining to how effective foreign agencies are in Thailand. But if based on my experience last year and this year, pertaining to most at-risk population, for example, sex workers, drug users, transgender, MSM, people living with HIV, young people, marginalized young people, I don't see the programs. There are many initiatives to collect donations, which is a standard act of an NGO or a corporate social investment. But I don't see the active engagement with marginalized groups. I'll give you an example. The engagement I'm looking for is participation of let's say people living in the slums, participation in governance, for them to decide, to be given the tools to be able to decide and determine what they can do for their slum. And of course, people living in the slums face constant battles with landlords who want their land back. They face a huge problem when it comes to the flood, not only health-based issues, but also income issues. Poverty is very real. Urban poverty is an abomination in not only in Bangkok, but in many parts of Southeast Asia.
From what you're seeing right now, what is the general feeling amongst the Thai people, not the government, not what the talking heads are saying, but amongst the Thai people that you're encountering on the street, what do they think their particular problem is, where the problem lies, and what the real solutions will be, or could, or maybe even should be?
Most of the people that I speak to are marginalized people, people who are poor, or people living with disabilities, or people living with HIV or drug users, whatever not. And the people that I speak to would want the government to play a more deeper role, and of course to allocate the resources to allow participation of marginalized groups in this governance, in this government. But of course, the challenge that marginalized people face is actually the politics. There is a uncomfortable balance or clash or rivalry between the red shirts and the yellow shirts, and it's a daily agonizing episode of a bad drama. And most of the resources and the attention of general public are focused on these political dramas, and it delays the active participation of the government, of civil society, of the community, and of corporate sectors to work in a tri-sector partnership. Visible indicators of politics, bad politics, screws up the process. It prevents them from participating. People don't know whether Yin Luck's government, like last week, they don't know whether her government will still be around because of the Constitutional Court and its decision on Yin Luck trying to change the constitution. Which she has the right to, by the way. So, general public, the poor, are very supportive of this government. But this government can't touch Bangkok because this Bangkok is run by another government, which incidentally is a yellow base, yellow shirt supporting government. And politics prevent active engagement of intervention programs, of prevention programs, whether it's health based or livelihood issues. So I would say politics is number one. Number two, it's not the resources they have. Thais are very, very adamant in terms of working together, very strong-headed individuals, very passionate also, and very unique characteristics in Southeast Asia. But the second challenge is the capitalist world, the need, the desire for individuals to progress, and they would rather embrace apathy than look at society as a whole, you know. So marginalized people face a challenge because the general public does not seem to be sympathetic or empathetic towards the marginalized people's issues. Now the most talked about issue is the flood. Mm-hmm. The poor are concerned about that the floods will affect them. And affect Bangkok, and not to mention the other provinces, the rural folks up north or down south. But the elites or the people who are in the rat race, the corporate rat race, many of them are not concerned. They know for a fact that if the flood comes, they're just going to move to their second home. So there's this growing gap between the social class. There is a social class war between the rich and the poor. The rich have sufficient resources to look after themselves if there is a flood, and even like last year, many of them went overseas to stay at their holiday homes. And I'm not exaggerating. This is I hate comparing countries, but it's almost almost similar to India, for example, mm-hmm. where you have the ultra rich and you have the ultra poor. But as the poor had to, and the working class had to suffer through the flood last year, similar concerns, and trying to stimulate marginalized people are trying to stimulate, and the government trying to stimulate those who are above the working class to be more to embrace empathy towards fellow Thais, much less the non-Thais, for example, the migrant workers. But it's a slow process. There's a social class issue, and that would be the second challenge that the Thai people are facing, especially the poor people.
Okay, this is the Angry Indian, and you are listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. We're speaking to our health editor, Sashnan. You can find his work at sashnan.com, and you can learn more about him and follow his work on Twitter at Bedlam Fury. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. We're going to take a brief break for stations to identify themselves. Feel free to contact us at aboriginalradio@lavabit.com. Please stay tuned.
And here I would like briefly to compare the parable of Brave New World with another parable which was put forth more recently in George Orwell's book 1984. I'm inclined to think that the scientific dictatorships of the future, and I think there are going to be scientific dictatorships in many parts of the world, will be probably a good deal nearer to the Brave New World pattern than to the 1984 pattern. They will be a good deal nearer, not because of any humanitarian qualms in the scientific dictators, but simply because the Brave New World pattern is probably a good deal more efficient than the other. That if you can get people to consent to the state of affairs in which they are living, the state of servitude, the state of being, well, it seems to me that the nature of the ultimate revolution with which we are now faced is precisely this, that we are in process of developing a whole series of techniques which will enable the controlling oligarchy, who have always existed and presumably always will exist, to get people actually to love their servitude. People can be made to enjoy a state of affairs which, by any decent standard, they ought not to enjoy. And these methods, I think, are a real refinement on the older methods of terror, because they combine methods of terror with methods of acceptance. But then there are the various other methods which one can think of. There is, for example, the pharmacological method. This was one of the things I talked about in Brave New World. The result would be that, you can imagine a euphoric which would make people thoroughly happy even in the most abominable circumstances. I mean, these things are possible.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service. aboriginalpress.blogspot.com.
This is a mortal technique. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Strong evidence suggests that George Bush and Dick Cheney launched an illegal war in which tens of thousands of civilians were killed. We are told to look upon these deaths as an exaggeration or an acceptable loss in the war on terror. But this administration has lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court approval, leaked classified information, and produced phony news reports. People have been imprisoned without charges and tortured, and illegal weapons used. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor for an investigation. Peace.
Every day, one more Aboriginal person will test positive for HIV. Some will be rejected by their family, friends, and community. They will live in isolation, their voices no longer heard. HIV/AIDS stigma and discrimination denies our people the right to protect their future. You can make a difference. Be their voice.
The Downing Street memo is relevant. The facts on the ground tell us there were no WMDs in Iraq and no links to 9/11. So, was the president misinformed about these issues? Or was intelligence being fixed to support an invasion? To read the Downing Street memo, or for news and information about it, go to the website afterdowningstreet.org.
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Traditionally, healthcare, including reproductive health, was women's business and respected as such. Reclaim your healthcare choices by keeping yourself informed and sharing information with your relatives. Inform yourself about Plan B, known as the morning after pill. Plan B will protect you from becoming pregnant after a sexual assault or unprotected sex if taken within 72 hours. Make sure your local Indian Health Service facility carries Plan B. It does not require a prescription and should be provided upon request. It's your right. For more information, call your local healthcare facility. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
Radio Insurgente, la voz de los sin voz.
Vamos, 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 vamos adelante, para que salgamos en la lucha avante, porque nuestra patria grita y necesita de todo el esfuerzo de los zapatistas.
Transmitiendo desde algún lugar de las montañas del sureste mexicano, en la frecuencia 100.1 en FM.
This is DJ Fusion of the Fusebox Radio Broadcast and BlackRadiosBack.com, and you're now listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, another slice of real black radio for the masses. All right? Peace.
Another recipe, written through telepathy. At all times, keep my secret weapon next to me. Soloist, I can't control the way I flow with this. I'm trying to save life, just like Noah did. What's the truth? Look at all these rotten fruit. All the young youth, did it stem from the roots? Shady governments, they sniffing heroin and drop bombs on Lebanon. And it's gonna come. Activists, you gotta master psychiatrics or get the padded mattress. Y'all niggas been deceived. I'm talking about you, the crackheads and the thieves. We need to focus on our needs. We dying every day because we can't sustain greed. Obese police beat niggas in the streets. CEOs, president, they all creeps. Are we certain that these churches working cause the hood's hurting? We've been tricked by yourself, nobody's perfect. If you study properly, we all God's property. So many call, but they spread the word sloppily. Then the few, see I'm way beyond your curfew. Sticks and stone, but it's words that really hurt you. You see it's words that really hurt you.
Now you never die, we in the days of getting high. It's the Lord, as you win, it's all lies. Never die, we in the days of getting high. As you win, it's the Lord, it's all lies. Shit is lies, man. Shit is lies, man. Futuristic, we realistic.
Dying thirsty from the struggle to my own hustle bubble. Dying thirsty from the struggle to my own hustle bubble. Dying thirsty from the struggle to my own hustle bubble. Dying thirsty. From
from the struggle to my own hustle bubble. Dying thirsty from the struggle to my own hustle bubble. Dying thirsty from the struggle to my own hustle bubble. Dying thirsty from the struggle to my own hustle bubble. Dying thirsty from the struggle to my own hustle bubble.
You are listening to the Angry Indian Unintelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Welcome back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. This is the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service, broadcasting from radioforall.net, and we are also blogging this podcast from our feed burner RSS feed at APNSPR. And we are carried by an ever-widening network of independent information providers not financially hamstrung by the corporatist news model, which includes Berkeley Liberation Radio of San Francisco. For more information on the news items and opinions discussed in this internet radio broadcast, please visit our electronic newspaper at aboriginalpressnews.tumblr.com and aboriginalpress.wordpress.com and ang-newswire.com. You may also leave us a polite voicemail at Aboriginal Media Group via Google Talk. And you can always email our studios at aboriginalradio@lavabit.com. And welcome back, my brothers and sisters of the Fourth World, our non-Aboriginal ideological comrades, and the negative elements staunchly opposed to human justice and social harmony. But in spite of that, they take the time to listen to this show on the sly anyway. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Now, some of you might be aware we've kind of been hammering the system just a little bit, mostly because we see the injustice and we're trying to figure out why so many of our brothers and sisters out here do not see the injustice to the point where they're ready to stand up and say something. And that includes our melanized brothers and sisters. We have a real problem in the United States. Now, you might be aware of a report because we've been tweeting and posting about it, and you know the word is on the street. The Malcolm X grassroots movement has put out a devastating report. Now, this comes at a perfect time because last night, for those of you who are into cable news media, George Zimmerman, I don't know what to put this guy as. You know, he's supposed to be an American. He identifies as I don't know what he identifies as. You know, he claims to be an American. We all know what the hell, you know, that means. It doesn't mean anything. Trayvon Martin was an American. And we're talking about that case right now. And we've had several black men. Milton Hall was killed in Saginaw, Michigan just last week. His mother was a police brutality activist. So it's not, you know, we're wondering if this was a targeted thing. But do we have to wonder anymore? Do we really have to wonder any longer or any more about what is happening out here? Now, we have the assistant editor from Final Call newspaper. You should be aware of that paper because we try to make light of it here when we can. The last time we mentioned the Final Call at any length, it was because there was a newspaper, the Atlanta Jewish Journal, I believe, or the Atlanta Journal. It's a Jewish newspaper in Atlanta. I'd never heard of the paper. I'm not from Atlanta. But they published a very ridiculous piece by President Obama, and that got a lot of white people to look at the Final Call. Well, I'm going to ask my white listeners to do me the favor of going back to thefinalcall.com to get yourself a copy of this new report. We are looking here at a problem that has been going on since the black man has been in the Americas. And if you ask the average person who identifies as American, you would never know that it was slavery here. You would never know that there was Jim Crow. You would never know that African men have been hanging from the trees in the South and in the North like fruit. And here, while we're going through the Trayvon Martin tragedy, the Trayvon Martin, I don't know what to call it. I mean, it is a tragedy, but, you know, as black men and women, you know, we're looking at this, and this is in our face. You know, we're not talking about the disrespect that's coming to the president, and we're not even really talking right now about how that disrespect towards Barack Obama reflects on the rest of us. We're talking about a situation that has been going on here, not for decades, not for years, but for more than 200 years. And I want to bring the assistant editor of the Final Call newspaper, Mr. Muhammad, on to discuss this new report and where we're going to go, especially during an election period, when we have a black man running. What does it mean to say that the African population in the United States is basically being exterminated? Every 40 hours, a black man is killed in the United States, either by a police officer, by a paid security officer, or, you know, these wannabe gun-toting NRA, theorizing bastards that are just running around and using the Stand Your Ground law or the Castle law to basically prey upon the African population in the United States. Now, I've talked enough, so we're going to welcome Mr. Muhammad on and on what is going on and what exactly this report entails.
Okay, well, thank you. I'm really honored to be here with you and with the listeners. As you know, since black people have been in the United States, we've really been under siege. And this narrative actually has been reinforced by the new report from the Malcolm X grassroots movement. What I found so outstanding about the report when I looked through it was that typically activists tend to rely on rhetoric, emotional rhetoric, you know, some sound bites, but they're a little short on details when you begin to question them. And really that hurts the movement more than it helps. But what the Malcolm X grassroots movement has done is that they've actually shown how these killings of 120 black people in the United States just in the first 6 months of 2012, keep that in mind, just in the first 6 months of 2012 shows basically that there is a license to kill that has been given to law enforcement officials. Many of these, you know, I guess you would call them self-appointed vigilantes, these community watch patrolmen, those types of individuals, really, really when they run into black people, young blacks, older blacks, they really, really feel like shoot first, ask questions later. And the killing of Trayvon Martin really, really raised the consciousness of many. But across the black communities nationwide, most people were like, hey, this happens all the time. It's just something that, you know, we didn't hear. Really, you didn't know a lot about Trayvon Martin until you heard the 911 recordings. If it weren't for the 911 recordings being released, really, we may not have even been dealing with Trayvon Martin right now like we are today. But because of 911 recordings that were released, people were outraged and began to hear about it, and then it raised the level and raised the stature of the discussion to a point where now nationally and internationally, people are looking at what happens to George Zimmerman and in the case of killing Trayvon Martin. But the killing also harkened back to a period in America in the not-so-distant past when it was nearly impossible for a white man to be charged with the killing of a black man. So these are some of the things that we're looking at right now, and the extrajudicial killings, that's not an accident using that kind of language, because really, really, that's what's going on in many nations of the earth right now with the drones internationally shooting down people and killing them with drones without the benefit of a trial. And that's happening here in the United States to black people in many cities. And if you're able to look through the report, you can see that it's not relegated to one particular coast, not relegated to one particular location in the United States, or even a population demographic. What is specific is most of them, all of these, in these cases, these were black people under the age of 31, generally between the ages of 15 and 31 generally, and a high majority of them were unarmed. So this is something that we need to look at, and it's something that the report does very well of discussing and extracting the data.
Yeah, okay. Now, for those of you, and this is my fault, because he and I both have been rushed today, so, you know, this is, you know, I apologize to the listeners for this. I failed to mention the name of the report. Now, it's called The Report on Extrajudicial Killing of Black People, that you can find at the Final Call news site, which is finalcall.com. I suggest that you download your copy. You'll be able to find that at a few places, but I believe that's a good starting point for anyone, because you will find a list of other articles there by the excellent staff detailing violent incidences, not just with police officers, not just with uniformed security personnel. You know, we had a brother in Louisiana that was found hanging from a tree. We're still being told that this was a self-inflicted case.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I don't see how that could be. And even the local law enforcement doesn't seem to understand that, but that's the way it is. So I advise everyone to go to finalcall.com and to review this work so that you don't understand that this report is coming out of a vacuum. This is not being made up. This is not being put out by the GOP to discredit the Obama re-election campaign. We're doing this. You know, I'm saying we as a community is doing this because the Obama campaign has not. Now, let me say that again for those of you who don't want to hear that out there in the community. The Obama administration isn't doing anything in this regard. Nothing. Silch. Zero. They're not doing anything. All of these African celebrities that you like are not saying a word. They're not doing anything. We have a grassroots movement that did this on their own dime. And you know, we want to know, will the community, will those who actually have the power to do something about it, will they address this? And I, you know, as we were talking before we came in, I was speaking with Brother Muhammad, and you know, I'm going to ask you on the air, have the black members of the GOP, have members of the Black Congressional Caucus, have any black politicians approached you about the information that is in this report and come to you with any sort of remedies, solutions, or plans of action?
No, I haven't heard from anyone yet. The article has been out for a couple of days. The report has been out for maybe, I had a preliminary report maybe a week ago, and they did some updates that hit right on the 16th. And we definitely want to hear from members of the Congressional Black Caucus. You know, we need those individuals who are there to raise these types of questions on the floor. And I think it's a situation where, you know, as you look at the data and you look at where we are at this period of time in the United States, people would have you think that we're living in a post-racial America where, you know, people aren't hunted down because of the color of their skin, where everyone has the presumption of being innocent until proven guilty. But this report shows that these vigilantes, these law enforcement officials, security guards, self-appointed patrolmen are acting as judge, jury, and executioner. And it, through the report, in only of the 120 cases, in only about 9 cases was someone actually charged, or you know, the person who shot down and killed the individual. They mentioned 120 cases. In only 9 cases was an individual actually arrested and dealt with and had to go through, you know, the legal proceedings in order to be exonerated of the crime. Mm-hmm. So there's a serious problem right there. And then, of course, if you want to say, well, that's not a big deal, everybody is innocent until proven guilty, I'd like you to switch the racial demographics and let me know if you had this situation going on in which 120 white people were killed by black security guards, self-appointed law enforcement officials, if that many individuals would have been able to get up and walk away. And I think we all know the answer to that.
Yeah, well, see, one of the reasons why I asked you the last question was because even though, you know, I know that the report has only been out for less than 5 days, but if this was an AIPAC paper,
absolutely,
we would have heard about it within 6 hours.
Oh, absolutely. It would have been all over the news and everything. It would have been dealt with.
And right. Everyone would have had a statement from Barack Obama to the lowest level Republican who wants to make a name for himself, you know, on the floor of the House. You know, what will it take then? Because, you know, for those of you who haven't read the report yet, let me give you just a little bit of it. I mean, this is nothing. This is just like the tip of the iceberg. This is page 5 of the report. The executions that Brother Muhammad is just bringing up, 13 out of this, you know, 120, 13 or 11% were children under the age of 18. 22 or 18% were 18 to 21 years old, just entering adulthood. 48 or 40% were 22 to 31 years old. 17% were 32 to 31. 8% were 42 to 51, such as the case recently of, you have Romali Graham, who was definitely in the younger stats. Well, we just had a Marine who was shot to death in his house.
Right, in New York, that's right.
Was it upstate New York? Is that upstate New York, that area?
I think it was the Bronx.
It's the Bronx. Well, okay. Well, yes, part of that borough. he's telling them that, you know, I didn't call you, it was an accident, and it was a misunderstanding. There was no need for them to break into this man's home. There was no need for them to do this. The family was outside. They could have dealt with this situation. Kenneth Chamberlain, sorry, because the name was trying to come to me. This was an elder. 8% of the people killed were between 42 and 51. 4% were over 52 years of age. 2% were of undetermined age. I mean, there's a graphic here to explain this. All of the notes are here. If you cannot, if you can read this and go through all of this information as I did, because I went through it last night twice. If you can go through all of this information and come away from this and saying that the United States is about justice, that the United States is about freedom and democracy and fair play and what have you, then, you know, there's something really wrong with you and you need to get yourself checked out. Now, you shouldn't need this report, actually, to understand which way the wind is blowing. But for those of you who have to have hard facts, which I agree with you, we all need to check our stuff. But, you know, we talk about this, and now here are the numbers. Here are the numbers. I've never seen a report like this come out of the black community before. From the grassroots? No, I haven't. If this does not take off, in terms of changing the policies and the minds of this country, then we have a very, very serious problem. And let me ask you before we take a break, Brother Muhammad, when the final call was approached with this report, what was the mindset in the newsroom over there on how to approach this?
Oh, well, instantly, you know, when I was, you know, I'm not your typical reporter. We involve ourselves in activist journalism here. So we're really, really connected with the community, and we try to stay connected to tell the stories happening in our community. And we like to know that, and we know that what you find in the final call, you won't find in any other newspaper, even any of the black newspapers that are in the local locations around the United States. So when I was approached by it, by Rosa Clemente, and she called me, and I've known her for quite some time, when she was the vice presidential candidate for the Green Party, when Cynthia McKinney ran in 2008, I interviewed her. And when she sent me the report, I said, okay, well, let me look at it, because of course I get a lot of reports. And when I went through this, I said, man, this is something that we really, really need to elevate, because we have no problem, you know, rallying around the death of Sean Bell or rallying around the death of Oscar Grant III, these highly publicized cases. But the names of these individuals who were shot and killed and died that you would never know, we need to make sure to tell their stories as well. And so as I looked through it, I said, this information is compelling. And with my background, having gone to Geneva and the United Nations and dealt with the Durban Review Conference and dealing with international law, which is, you know, one of my focuses and, you know, one of my hobbies is reading about that, I saw immediately the parallels between what's going on in Israel and what's going on in other locations and what's going on here in the United States. But because we're so narrow-minded and really just focused on what's going on our block, we don't see that really there's an international problem, and what's going on over there is really, really happening here as well. So instantly the discussion was like, this is worthy of a cover. And as we began to mine the data and reach out to individuals and talk to other individuals, they felt the same way. And all of them are really sharing your same view, which is, it's good to see a report like this come from a grassroots organization that isn't supplemented by millions of dollars from the business community. They're not necessarily wealthy business owners or media professionals that have the ability to shape a narrative and get somebody to mention it and make 1,000 t-shirts and make it an internet sensation. This is the people who are on the streets, in the bricks, talking to the people, getting the information, sending it to us, and we have an obligation as the independent black national news weekly to get that information out so the others can see it and as you're stating, read it for themselves and then become part of this movement.
Okay, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, since the brother has opened the door that I was waiting to be opened, we will bring up the international scene on this, and we're going to try to expand the mind of the black man in America to realize that he is part of the entire process and is more than someone who is simply there to make money for the, you know, for the extant system. I mean, we got to get past this. And I feel that this is, you know, one of the things that will do that. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. You're listening to an interview with Brother Ashad Muhammad.
He is the assistant editor of the Final Call newspaper, and we're discussing the report on extrajudicial killings of Africans in the United States. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Please stay tuned.
I come from a slave father, not grandfather, a slave father, born in eastern North Carolina in 1843, escaped from slavery in 1858, a contemporary co-fighter with Frederick Douglass, Harriet Tubman, John Brown, Sojourner Truth, and William Lloyd Garrison for the freedom not only of the Negro people, but of millions of white workers caught in the same serfdom as their black brothers and sisters. So our brothers and sisters from Mexico, the Philippines, from the lands of Asia, from the West Indies, from Latin America, have come to these shores to share the same fate. And all through our history, the working masses, colored and white, speaking many languages, representatives of the finest of the old and new world cultures, have had to fight every step of the way for a decent wage, for decent homes, for decent education for their children, for human dignity itself.
Don't let the colonial occupation blues get you down. Listen to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The podcast for Intelligent Aboriginals.
I'm gonna stand until I can't stand no more if I have to stand by myself.
The American people are the last people to wake up.
Prisons are becoming an integral part of the U.S. economy.
People of color organize critical thinking, strategic work, and direct action for social, racial, gender, and economic justice.
A world run by a handful of greedy bankers and CEOs who nobody elected can't possibly last.
People of Color Organize features intersections of race, politics, feminism, movements, class, internationalism, and theory.
This is about the Black Panthers. This is about the American Indian movement. This is about all of us.
Visit us online at peopleofcolororganize.com. Follow us on Twitter at POC Organize and Facebook at facebook.com/peopleofcolororganize. You can also find us on Tumblr at peopleofcolor.tumblr.com.
We're organizing against what we term genocide.
I'm Dick Gregory with PETA. Martin Luther King Jr. taught me the fight against oppression is never an easy one. It's even harder if you have no voice. For animals held captive in circuses, life consists of cramped cages, shackles, and daily beatings. There is no escape. They cannot demand their freedom. Images like these bring only one word to my mind, slavery. Be an abolitionist for the animals. Please don't go to circuses. For more information, contact PETA.
757-622-PETA.
HIV संक्रमित हरुलाई माया ममता र समाजमा सम्मानित जीवन जिउने वातावरण निर्माण गरौं।
यो उनीहरुको अपेक्षा होइन अधिकार हो।
रोगलाई तिरस्कार र बहिष्कार गरौं, रोगीलाई होइन। एचआईभी अरुलाई मात्र होइन, तपाईलाई पनि लाग्न सक्छ।
सकारात्मक सोच, स्वस्थ समाज अनि सही निर्णय नै सरल तथा सफल जीवन हो।
सामाजिक रूपान्तरणका लागि गगन गृहको एउटा प्रयास।
US government put a $1 million bounty on the head of political exile Asada Shakur. What does that mean for us as a people? And what is her importance to our cause? And I know that y'all also was represented at a press conference in New York City with Charles Barron and Mos Def, you know, and voicing y'all support. You know, why is Dead Prez doing that, and who is Asada Shakur, and what is her importance to our struggle?
The U.S. government has once again openly declared war against the poor and oppressed people of the world. Once again, this declaration has come in the form of this $1 million bounty, which rests upon the head of not only Asada Shakur, but our movement. Because the most important thing about the bounty that they placed against Asada Shakur, who they call Joanne Tessimar, is that she represents the struggle inside our community that has not died, and that they know that with very quickly the spark can re-inflame what is going on all around our community. So it's sending a message to the future revolutionaries, don't become what we know will eventually happen. We retaliate from that kind of aggression against our people by saying Asada Shakur is welcome here. And that idea that Asada Shakur is welcome here should be adopted by every hood, every blood, every Crip, every Latin King. It should be adopted by every old folk home, every school, Boy Scout club. Asada Shakur is welcome here is the identity that the government is not welcome in our lives and will not be tolerated, violating our basic rights of humanity. So I think those are the forces at play, and Asada Shakur is being used as primarily as that case. We say hands off Asada Shakur, and we will keep her safe by any and all means necessary. And we were represented at the press conference in New York City. You know, like I said, which of many places is gaining a momentum, like all across our country in the African community, Atlanta and down here in L.A., we ready, willing, and able. So just within a quick time of organization, people like the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, which include the Free Your Hood Committee, and organizations like the Grassroots Artists Movement, Charles Barron in the city council, in the government, and cultural workers like Mos Def and ourselves were gathered to send a resolution that the bounty should be taken off of Asada Shakur's head.
Este es William Rodríguez, último sobreviviente de las Torres Gemelas. Cuando Richard Nixon abusó de su poder, el Congreso llevó a cabo una seria investigación de los dos partidos políticos, la cual dio lugar a artículos de acusación. La evidencia de hoy en día sugiere que George Bush y Dick Cheney lanzaron una guerra ilegal, mintieron al Congreso, espiaron a americanos sin la aprobación de la Corte, dieron información clasificada, produjeron informes noticiosos falsos, encarcelaron y torturaron a personas sin cargos e utilizaron armas ilegales y atacaron a civiles. Pide a tu representante del Congreso que apoyen a la resolución 635 para una investigación. Patrocinado por AfterDowningStreet.org.
This is Kristen Hirsch from Throwing Muses, and you're listening to a podcast released under a Creative Commons license.
Now that America has a black president, is this proof that racism is a thing of the past?
Well, I think white men were 100% of the people that wrote the Constitution, 100% of the people who signed the Declaration of Independence, 100% of the people who died at Gettysburg and Vicksburg, probably close to 100% of the people who died at Normandy. This has been a country built basically by white folks in this country who were 90% of the entire nation. I think they ought to defend the legitimate rights of white working class folks who are the victims of discrimination.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Media. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
Cet indigène est intelligent de radio.
Internet radio for smarter original.
Welcome back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. I'm your host, The Angry Indian. We're speaking with Brother Ashad Muhammad. He is the assistant editor of the Final Call newspaper that you can find at finalcall.com. You can also check his work, Ashad Muhammad, or at Ashad M on Twitter. And I really want you to, you know, investigate what he is doing right now and trying to get this out. And we're going to roll now into what initially jumped off in my mind, once I got past my own emotional, you know, washdown of feeling, you know, vindicated after reading this report. The next thing that came to me was internationally, how this fits, how this will work on the international scene. Now, we have reports from Palestinian organizations that are coming through. We have reports from Northern Ireland organizations, groups in Chile, groups in Mexico. We have groups in Puerto Rico to come out. So now the African in the United States, we never got the plebiscite that we were looking for, that we thought we would have had about 20 years ago. And all of these problems have still been here. Now, this report doesn't cover everything. but for the first time, as far as I can remember, I'm reading a report that fits on the par of all of the other international reports I've read dealing with these subjects. So, you know, to make sense of what I'm saying, because I know I'm just talking because I, you know, this is emotional for me. You know, how many times do I have to pick up the newspaper to see another black man dead, no gun? Oh, we don't know if he actually did anything. Oh, well, too bad, he broke, and we'll just move on to this, you know, next story. No, see, you cannot read this report and move along like that and then tell me you're an intelligent human being. You simply cannot do it. So, you know, internationally, and I'm going to ask Brother Muhammad this, internationally, in light of, say, like the Goldstone report, which was totally dismissed because of its weight, you know, where would you place this report on the extrajudicial killings of Africans in the United States in balance with the entire international community in terms of human rights and social justice?
Oh, I definitely think that it's up there, you know, because that you never have the opportunity to hear the, you know, you hear it rhetorically, you hear people say black people in America are in a condition that's worse than some places around the globe, this, that, and the other. But when the stats are actually presented to you, there's no way around it. You know, one of the important things that was quoted in the beginning of the article was from the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which says mm-hmm. everyone has the right to life, liberty, and security of person. Nobody disagrees with that generally. Then the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights says no one shall be arbitrarily deprived of his life. These are things that generally, across the board, people agree with this. And then even if you go down to the special rapporteur from the United Nations on extrajudicial killings, they talk about these types of things. But we tend to see it going on and we say, oh, this is going on in Africa, or this is going on in Sudan, or this is going on someplace else, or this is going on in Syria, or this is going on in Libya. But we've never looked at it from the standpoint of what's going on here in the United States. So I talked to a couple of international lawyers, lawyers who specialize in international law, and they just basically saw it clearly as a parallel of the African colonialist experience that we've had. Blacks have always been the victims of this type of violence. And in terms of the police officers, it's always been a colonialist type of occupation type of a thing in the United States, you know, whether it's Detroit, New York, L.A., or wherever you are. So these types of, you know, I know a lot of our people don't really think about these types of things. They don't really know when you say extrajudicial killing, you know, even if you just say sanctioned killing, or if you just say killing without the benefit of having the opportunity to be brought before a judge. You know, I think most people say they're against that, but they don't see the deaths of these black men and women as something to be concerned with. And that is due to the racial profiling that takes place, the demonization of the black communities. Sometimes we contribute to that with some of the music and some of the movies and some of our actresses and actors and how they portray themselves. But, you know, that being the case, because of how the world views black people, these deaths are not worthy of an outcry. Mm. So we have to, you know, the lives have been devalued. And so while we are upset about what's going on in law enforcement, we have to do a better job in our communities of stopping the senseless murders, this black-on-black killing, the guns that are going into our communities, the drugs. We have to also fight on both tracks to stop people from killing us on the outside. But once we reduce the crime on the inside, then we can say we don't give you the opportunity and the right to go ahead and shoot our people down. But when they see you shooting your own people down, or shooting down little children, or shooting down grandmothers, they say, well, you're killing them down, you're killing each other. It's no big deal for us to kill you. So we have a couple of areas that we really, really need to fight. The international element, I think, is really, really important, because once we see what's going on here, we can connect with what's going on in Africa, the Afro-Caribbean, the Afro-descendants that are in areas of Ecuador and Brazil. Mm-hmm. It's all one people. It's all united, and it's one struggle. And the same people are always seemingly on one end of the gun. So we have to connect these movements. We have to connect the international and the national. We have to make this connection.
Okay, so you mentioned Durban. Where was Obama?
Well, you know, well, of course, as you know, the United States, when we went to in 2009 and went to Geneva, Switzerland for that, of course, the United States boycotted. They were among the nations. And then when we came back again here, the United States always seems to boycott that aspect of it, even though a majority of the nations deal with that. And, you know, we know that's because of the symbiotic parasitic relationship with Israel. So, you know.
Yeah, but, you know, it's something to mention because he not only snubbed Durbin while talking about Brother Madiba in South Africa, saying that he honored Nelson Mandela, but he boycotted Durbin. And then he boycotts the, I call it a boycott, the NAACP. And sends his VP to talk to the people, right? You know?
Right, he sends Joe Biden to represent for the NAACP. But he's spoken for the NAACP before. But yes, this year, if that had been George Bush, you know, George Bush, of course, was crucified for not speaking to the NAACP. They went nuts on him or whatever. So,
well, he came to speak to the NAACP to get us to buy into the subprime loan scandal, which helped crash the world's economy.
Right. Those are fair questions. I think as the president of everyone, he has to be, you know, Barack Obama got a high level of support from black people. And I think that, but it's up to black people to pull his card and speak about it and represent him, right, like we do, and say, hey, you know, this may be a brother that we supported, and you may love him as a brother and whatever, but you deserve answers. And so, yes, even with this report, I want to see if anything is stated, if something is stated, something should come out from all areas of the political spectrum, on the local level and on the national level. I believe that they should say these things, and we'll be reporting whatever they say and whatever they release, and we'll give justice to them.
Well, there's one way to, you know, it could be done. The Malcolm X Rasmus movement could simply send a nice copy to the Justice Department in care of Eric Holder, and a letter of intent, and you know, he could respond.
Yeah, and if they don't respond, then that'll be a follow up to say they didn't respond.
It is that simple.
That's the power of the press.
That simple. Okay, so, you know, we're still on the international bit. We see AFRICOM. We see the Obama administration and what's going on right now in Africa in terms of CONI, in terms of the insurgents, whatever you want to call them. Yeah, I call them the mad power brokers, because whoever gets in power is going to do what they can to maintain power, and they'll make whatever deals with the colonialist systems they need to stay in power. Yeah, I could be wrong about that. I mean, there were people, obviously, who didn't go along with that, and they're gone.
You talking about CONI?
Well, CONI was one. See, I'm still trying to figure out what's going on with CONI's thing and who this really benefits. Yeah. Because he's been running around for a while. Why all of a sudden are they interested in him, other than expanding the military presence of the rest, and NATO, that does not have a charter any longer, as far as I'm concerned, that does not have any reason to exist with the Soviet Union gone.
I agree with that. That's my view. Is anything, basically what you're dealing with is the people, they're using these things as tool of imperialism. You know, and, you know, when they bring something up like that, and even with NATO, you know, I was on the ground here some months ago covering NATO. And basically, you know, what I pulled out about it was that NATO is basically protecting the financial interests of the same land masses and imperialist governments that benefited from the slave trade.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, we just have to look beyond what you're presented in the mainstream media, which has a vested interest in representing their financial interests. Okay? So, I mean, it's really, when you look at it, the chess game, it's not that difficult to see, but you have to look a little bit further than just what you're presented with every day.
Mm-hmm.
It, so, I think it's very simple. Anytime you see anything going on, whether it's Syria, whether it's Libya, any of these locations where America is trying to get in and operate, there is an imperialist agenda present.
All right, so, you know, as a final question, let me ask you this. China has just made a rather bold announcement, I think it was the day before yesterday, where they basically cashiered or called to, you know, called to task the government of Australia for his treatment of, I say, as an Indigenous person, our people there, they are people of color, our Indigenous brothers and sisters in Australia, and to, well, to the same degree, our brothers and sisters in the Torres Strait area. China, of course, does not view human rights, you know, supposedly exactly the way the West does, or say the Anglophone world does. And there was a lot of talk about the hypocrisy of China raising a human rights issue towards Indigenous people in Australia, while Indigenous people are being treated in China, say Tibet, say the Uyghurs, the two groups in particular, they're not being treated very well. So let me ask you, Mr. Muhammad, as a newsman and as someone who is, who has been in these various locales, as someone who is operating on an international law level, mentally and journalistically, how do you feel this report, once it really gets out here, because the blogosphere will do its best, I'm sure, to make sure that those who watch the internet to understand the currents for their respective governments, once they read this and absorb it. The reason I mention China is that the Chinese have raised reports like this before in terms of police brutality, in terms of the prison system, right, and in terms of racism. They did this under the Clinton administration. When the Clinton administration hit them on human rights abuses, they pulled from American news sources every human rights abuse they could find for like 2 years before that meeting. So in your opinion, as a journalist, where will the, how will China, how will Russia, how will the governments in the Middle East, how will governments like, say, Chavez in Venezuela, or Korea and Ecuador, and even Dr. Castro, even though he's not in charge anymore in Cuba, he looks very carefully at world media, and he has something to say about what goes on. When they read this, and we know that they will read this if they haven't read it already, what do you think the effect will be, and how should we react and respond politically as Africans in the United States to that response?
Yeah, well, you're right. I mean, I've heard, I remember I was writing a report right after the National Defense Authorization Act of 2012 that Obama signed into law. And I remember Russia's foreign ministry harshly criticizing the Obama administration's human rights record for Guantanamo Bay and things like that. And I think that, I mean, it's a real question. I mean, the United States really basically holds itself up as the paragon of democracy and human rights. And when other nations call individuals to task, I think that that's fair play. One thing about China, and you know what you spoke about as far as the Australian situation, I'm not really familiar with that. I thought you were going to take China's entry into Africa and why they've been moving into Africa so much. That's why I thought you were going to go with that.
Well, I was, but, you know, that, but we can bring that up, sure.
I think that when you have a sovereign nation, my position is it's up to the people of that nation to talk to their government leaders regarding human rights, regarding political rights, regarding economy. What I don't like is meddling in other nations' affairs. Mm. Because when you're on the ground in Syria, or you're on the ground in Libya, or you're on the ground in China, or you're on the ground in Barbados, there are realities that are specific to that location and that culture and those people that you can't see as an outsider. Okay? So I usually refrain from, being broadly critical of how other nations operate, especially living in a country where the same thing happens on a regular basis. I don't know if that answers your question or not.
Yeah, that's a fair enough question. And we can continue to roll into Africa, because one of the reasons why I brought up China was they had done this before. They've taken American media and said, look, this is your sources. This is the hypocrisy in your country. So don't tell us. We've been around for 6,000 years. You've been around for a little more than 200. Don't lecture to us. And that was the attitude. Now, being that we know, or at least I feel that you and I understand, that they will take this report and use it for propaganda purposes. This is understood. This is the game, right? But being that China is in Africa, and being that they've come in a little differently, and even though they've come in a little differently, say with soft shoes, the African press is noting that, you know, they're starting to have the same problems in terms of colonialism, mm-hmm. that Europeans have had here in the Americas, in Australia, in New Zealand, is almost the same problems. You have a lot of men who have been disaffected in China who are going to Africa. They're marrying African women. They're starting families. They're speaking African languages. They eat the food. They drink the beer. They like it there. So now here comes the companies who are telling them, well, hey, you know, you've got to push the Chinese culture and you got to do this and do that. And they're saying no. Right. So, you know, that's a contradiction. You know, they're saying that they like being there. And we have this new hybrid Chinese Afro culture that's not just popping up in Africa, but also in China. So, you know, being that the Chinese are now colonializing in a very soft way, in a somewhat gentle way, East and Central Africa, how will this report work in terms of the fact that they will be competing? You have whatever the Chinese firms are competing with Walmart, an American company in China. The big box stores are popping up all over the continent. Now, you know, how will this report get to them? Because these people are buying hair relaxers called African Pride. That's the name of the company.
Right.
And when they read this, and they're standing next to this, you know, Chinese national, and, you know, it's like, what is going to go on through the minds of both of these people, seeing what is happening in the United States that, as you just said, promotes itself as the bastion of all human endeavor? You know, how does this work? And, you know, and take into account that this will be used for propaganda purposes. But the truth of it is, how would this work on how Africans and Asians and Africans and Arabs and Africans and our Spanish speaking Indian brothers and sisters in the Americas, how will we start to get along now that we've entered this stage of international recognition and acknowledgement of our human rights?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent question. And that's always been what the enemy wanted to prevent. Mm. You know, they never wanted, they always hated that Nelson Mandela would not speak against Fidel Castro and would not speak against Yasser Arafat. They always hated whenever revolutionary groups and leaders band together and their people see themselves as one. They never want that to take place. They've always fought to stop black people in America from becoming having an international view, to see themselves as connected to black people on the continent, seeing themselves as connected to the Palestinian struggle. And now I think you're seeing, I'm sure you're familiar with the boycott, divestment and sanctions movement that's sweeping the United States and abroad, mm-hmm. Dealing with Israel, that they hate that language. The Israelis hate when the Americans, you hate when we say apartheid is going on in Palestine. They hate that when we say the Israelis practicing apartheid, because they saw how the world community came together to pull down the Afrikaner in South Africa, and they're seeing the same thing that is, you know, the same handwriting on the wall right now. It seems like our movement, maybe we have to become more sophisticated and learn how to operate. So in using this language, instead of going out like the Malcolm X grassroots movement, instead of saying, you all are killing black people, no justice, no peace, we don't like it, they went ahead and said, let's frame this in the language of international law and say this is extrajudicial killing. And it had more of an impact, I think, because of that. So the way we should deal with it is sponsor more reports like this. Make this particular report an annual report, mm-hmm. where we analyze these statistics.
Excellent.
Ask these law enforcement officials to respond to this, even though we don't expect them to do anything about it. And then, most importantly, in my view, we need to begin to police our own communities.
Mm-hmm.
We need to get out there with the brothers who were in the Bloods and the Crips and the GDs and the Vice Lords and the different street organizations around the United States and start working to secure our communities. To get the other individuals, some of our black police officers, they are from the communities that they're being sent into.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they can help assist and deliver some training. We have some of our brothers who have been veterans, who have gone over and fought people and got to Afghanistan and got to Iraq and said, man, why am I fighting these people? They pray the same as I do. And they came back to the United States and said, man, that's a mistake. Maybe those individuals can begin to train some of the brothers in the city. Maybe you can join with an organization such as the New Black Panther Party and these other organizations that are trying to move forward in that way. And then we'll be able to see ourselves saying, hey, we're policing our own community. We're providing services to our community. Then you don't have to worry about somebody going in. You know, there's a model for that. I don't know if you how often you get to New York, but there is in the Jewish Hasidic community, there's an organization called Shamrim, the Guardians. And they police their entire community. They have a full mobile command unit. They have walkie-talkies. They were even given bulletproof vests. And, you know, civilians aren't supposed to be able to wear body armor. But they were even given bulletproof vests to deal with some areas of New York in, that experience crime. And the community members that they patrol actually call members of the Shamrim before they call the police officers in some cases. You see, so we have an ability to solve these problems ourselves. We have the ability to make jobs which would stop this illicit trade in drugs and human trafficking. We have the ability to do these things, but it starts with identifying the problem. Yes, people were shooting us down, but we have the ability to take control and have some self-determination and Compton and in Los Angeles and in San Diego and in Chicago and in the Bronx and Brooklyn. We have the ability to do so, and hopefully this report will show us that this is something that goes beyond religious affiliation, beyond whether I'm a cultural nationalist, beyond whether I'm a capitalist or a Marxist or a communist, beyond whether I'm consider myself a Latino or whether I call myself Hispanic or whether I call myself a black man or whether I'm a member of the Nation of the Gods and the Earth or the Nation of Islam. Hopefully we'll see ourselves with a certain level of commonality that will enable us to move forward. So if this comes from that report and other reports that follow it, then this is a good model, in my opinion, then we will have been successful.
Yeah, well, time will tell, and I'm certainly going to do what I can to get as many people I think of, you know, that have some weight, some importance to look at this and take the report seriously. Because, you know, the first thing that's going to come through is, well, what right does the black community have to present a report on the police? So, you know, that's the first thing.
Right.
You know, what right do we have to, you know, address, you know, what is happening to us? And I want to thank Brother Ashad M. Muhammad. He is the assistant editor to the Final Call newspaper, a newspaper I've been reading most of my life. And we have been discussing the report of the extrajudicial killing of black people. And, you know, this is a subject that, you know, I was very happy to get you on because I know you're a busy man. And I really appreciate you taking the time to speak to our listeners about this. And we hope to hear from you soon. We would really like to do a follow up on this.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime. And I'd like to invite you or any of the callers or anyone who listens to hit me up on Twitter at Ashad M, that's A-S-H-A-H-E-D-M. I'm on Facebook, and you can also go to finalcall.com and you'll be able to go to my blog called Take Another Look. And, you know, ask me some questions. Tell me where you think the reporting could have been stronger and tell me where you need to, you think we should place emphasis. And we'll do our best to continue to serve and bring the information to you like you need it.
Okay, brothers and sisters, you heard from the man himself, Brother Ashad M. Muhammad, the assistant editor of the Final Call newspaper, finalcall.com. And I advise you to download your copy and pass it out and send it to everyone you know. Download your copy of the report on the extrajudicial killing of black people. This is The Angry Indian. You've been listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. And as usual, I would like to thank our Native brothers and sisters and our African students who are smart enough to stay in school, stay off drugs, and to stay clear of the gang activity that is becoming such a problem in Aboriginal communities all over the world. Get the technical knowledge to change the dominant colonialist paradigm while retaining self-knowledge of who you really are. Then, come back and help your people. Reporting from Occupied North America to the International Aboriginal Community for the Aboriginal Press News Service, this is The Angry Indian reminding you that if you want the man to get up off your back, all you've got to do is stand up. Power to the people. See ya.
Leave it for them. It's time for us, being gods, remember you poor righteous teachers. But you can't only teach knowledge. You got to let them reflect the knowledge that they're being taught. Knowledge without understanding is nothing. So the foundation got to be to understand the knowledge. So if you understand the knowledge in this day and time, we got to come together as one. Forget about, of course, the brother that's sitting on the van beside you is a Christian, or a War Science of America, or Baptist, whatever. The whole key to this matter is that if we don't come together as one to do what we're doing, if we don't do it, who's going to do it?
That's right, Bill.
Allah came to us. It gave us the knowledge. He gave us the wisdom. These parliaments that you have, we've been having these parliaments since 1964. We got to do something, not only with the parliament, we got to, after we leave the parliament, we got to connect with each other so that we can move forward.
घरेलू हिंसा में बाधा डालकर उसे रोको, बेल बजाओ। घरेलू हिंसा अधिनियम पर जानकारी के लिए bellbajao.org पर लॉग ऑन करें। ब्रेक थ्रू की पहल।
Get it. If you're curious or confused, get information or a pamphlet at most pharmacies or a health clinic. If you need help, see a doctor.
This is Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Strong evidence suggests that George Bush and Dick Cheney launched an illegal war and lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court approval, leaked classified information, produced phony news reports, imprisoned without charge and tortured, used illegal weapons and targeted civilians. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor House Resolution 635 for an investigation.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
You can't bring up, one guy sent me a very interesting thing about Barack Obama and race. You can't bring up anything other than that suddenly he's African American. If you start to, you know, delve around the edges of, wait a minute, isn't he mixed race? Weren't we told that last year? Whatever, biracial? Not allowed to say that anymore. Apparently, the mainstream media has dubbed him to be African American.
Yeah, I was driving in today, and I was seeing, because I saw this piece with him on 60 Minutes, and I thought to myself, he's very white in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, gee, can I even say that? Can I even say that without somebody else starting a campaign saying, what does he mean he's very white? He is. He's very white.
When a Muslim without a birth certificate has taken over the White House, you need a good white former junkie to show you the direction that America needs to go in. Beck, it's What's for Demagogue.
Hello, this is Maurice Muhammad, Minister of Information with Black Unity, and you can always find us at www.blackunity.name.com, and you're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Internet radio for smarter than the original.